It's Central Time. I'm Judith Sears Poisson.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up on Central Time, we'll talk about New Year's resolutions and ask you to call in and share some of yours.
First, a dispute over a frac sand mining permit in Trempealeau County is heading to the Wisconsin Supreme Court in just a couple of weeks. The case could have significant implications for the state's zoning laws. It could also impact the public's ability to provide input into decisions affecting zoning.
All Energy, an Iowa-based company that supplies frac sand to the oil and gas industry, was denied a sand mining permit in 2013. Now the company wants Wisconsin to change the rules around issuing such permits.
WPR reporter Rich Kramer joins us now from Eau Claire. Rich, welcome back to Central Time.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Well, so this company, All Energy, was denied a frac sand mining permit in 2013. On what grounds was that denial given?
Well, it was basically, in a nutshell, citizen concerns. Trempealeau County is kind of interesting in terms of frac sand country because it's zoned, meaning that if you want to build a sand mine, you need a conditional use permit. That goes before this committee that's made up of citizens and elected officials. And basically, the committee reviews your application, and then they might issue some conditions. And in this case, with All Energy, they gave a list of conditions that they wanted to be met. All Energy came back with some paperwork and documentation that said, here's how we're going to meet those conditions. Then it goes to a public hearing, basically, and there was overwhelming opposition to this plan, and a lot of people were concerned about dust. There was some testimony by people that said that their children living by another frac sand mine were experiencing asthma problems, etc. So then the committee voted 5-3, I believe, against the issuing the permit to All Energy.
So All Energy applied. They were given certain conditions to meet. They provided information on how they were going to meet those, but then they still were denied. My understanding is that some of the local officials had actually been voted in because they had a little stronger opinion on regulating frac sand. Do you think that played into, besides the public input, that those officials being in place also played into this?
It definitely did. There was a sea change that happened in a lot of local governments in frac sand country right around this time. I mean, if you remember 2012, 2013, 2014, there was explosive growth in the industrial sand mining industry, and a lot of people started to kind of rally, and they decided that they wanted to take some of the people in the Trempealeau County Board out, because before this, Trempealeau County had already approved 20-some permits. And some of the citizens organized. They got their own candidates who were more anti-sand, and they were able to win some seats and replace some of the more pro-sand county board members. And because of that, they got some of their people on this committee. And because of that, I think there was definitely a change in sentiment among the local officials, the elected officials on the county board.
So All Energy's request for this permit was denied. What happened then? What actions did the company take?
Oh, there were all kinds of actions. The company decided to go to court right away. They wanted a circuit court judge to overturn the ruling that the committee denying the permit. So that was number one. But the company also threatened to sue the county for $20 million, and they claimed that it was from lost business. Those two went nowhere. They lost both of those circuit court cases. Then the company also looked into annexing to the city of Arcadia, and there's a process in Wisconsin law where a company or landowners can petition a city to annex the property, and if they were able to have the mine property annexed to the city of Arcadia, they would be able to work with the city on the rules and kind of avoid the county rules. That didn't work out either. And then it went to the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals also ruled against All Energy, and now we're looking at the Supreme Court, the High Court of Wisconsin.
And so my understanding, Rich, is that All Energy and their lawyers are not just asking the state Supreme Court to basically say, yes, you should have been given this permit, but actually taking a much broader look at how permitting is done in the state. Is that a correct reading of that?
Yeah, I'd say so. They want their permit, but they also want the court to address a couple other things. Basically, they want the court to clarify whether or not public opinion, unsubstantiated claims made by members of the public, constitute substantial evidence for denying a permit. Right now, it does. And they want the court to clarify that. And also, the big one, the company is arguing and asking the Supreme Court to basically create a new rule that would require permits, and this is in summing it up as a layman for sure, but it would require that permits should be issued if a company meets conditions set by a local government. So in that case, theoretically, the public opinion would matter, but they wouldn't be able to use that as evidence against or in denying a permit. So the attorneys for the county say that this could really chill public input into these permit proceedings.
We're talking with WPR reporter Rich Kramer from Eau Claire, talking about All Energy's case that is going before the Wisconsin Supreme Court, looking at permitting for frac sand mining. And so, Rich, one of the quotes that I saw from the Trempealeau County attorney was saying that All Energy is saying that this is just public opinion, not evidence, but in fact there is evidence to show that this particular mining permit would be detrimental. Has there been a release of that kind of information?
Well, the evidence I think that he was referring to was basically that the people don't want it. Also, he was citing some things that there was some evidence that it would certainly change the beauty, the aesthetic beauty of the area, things like that. I think is what he was getting at, but he seems more concerned that this would basically really tip the scales in favor of companies or whoever wanted these conditional use permits, because if you're able to on paper meet these requirements, you would get the permit. But this attorney also argued that some of these things you can't possibly prove on paper. You know, you can't know if you're going to be able to fulfill all of these requirements, mm-hmm. or all of these conditions. So there is some wiggle room in there, and in the past, the courts and they've deferred to the local policymakers, and we'll see how the court decides to move on it.
Well, and it seems to me that this, if the Wisconsin Supreme Court ruled in favor of All Energy, saying, you know, if you're given a list of conditions to meet and if you show that you have a plan to do that, you should just get the permit. It seems like this would apply well beyond the area of frac sand mining and could be applied to a lot of different industries.
Right. The attorney for the county said that this would affect every city, any local government that has zoning. So every city, any county that has zoning, some of the towns have zoning, villages sometimes have zoning. It would be statewide, and it would have huge implications is what his argument is.
And the Walker administration has been quite strongly positioned on regulatory reform and the need for it. So is the incoming Trump administration on the national level. How might that set the stage for decisions made on either this motion or further permitting requests?
Well, it's hard to say how the Trump administration would play into this. But in Wisconsin, there have been two, maybe three bills introduced that would basically take the permitting authority away from local governments with regard to industrial sand mining, because the industry argues that in some cases, and All Energy would say that in this case, they're being unfairly treated because you've got a local government that has been taken over by, in their words, by people that are anti-sand, that don't want to give any more permits out for any more sand mines. So they say that is a hardship on them. They have the right to develop their property and make a profit. So that argument has gone to the state legislature, and there have been two bills that would basically have the state approve these things, and the local governments wouldn't be able to, they wouldn't really have much of a say at all. And those failed. A lot of public reaction, a lot of anger towards those bills. They both died, but a lot of folks that are concerned citizens, kind of the really keeping an eye on the frac sand industry, they fully expect another attempt by the state legislature to preempt this local control.
One interesting aspect of this, Rich, is that companies often need or want to build up good relationships with the communities in which they're working. Certainly, frac sand has been a pretty contentious issue, but it seems like All Energy pursuing this through several layers of the courts and now in front of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, even if they win, it seems like it would be very hard for them to have a good relationship with the surrounding communities.
Yeah, there's been a lot of examples. I mean, All Energy, they really went on a media blitz, too, when they were first denied the permit, and they would take out these full-page ads, then, and they even proposed spending $70 million to create a senior all-energy senior lodge because there was a health care center in the area that was closing down. I mean, a lot of promises. And now they also would up promise to pay so many cents on the dollar for every ton of sand that they mine. So, but, you know, there's a lot of ill will after you've threatened to sue the county for $20 million and you've gone all the way to the Supreme Court. But in other cases, after the dust settles, people just kind of go about their lives. They're not happy about the mine being there, if in this case the mine wins. But I guess time will tell if the company decides to, if they win, if to offer any of the financial incentives to the local community that they once promised.
So I believe this case is going before the Wisconsin Supreme Court on January 11th. Do we know how soon we might get a decision on that?
Absolutely not. No, I asked both attorneys for both sides, and they said there's no telling. All they know is that oral arguments are on the 11th.
Well, Rich, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That was Rich Kramer, WPR's reporter in Eau Claire, giving us the details on All Energy's petition in front of the Wisconsin Supreme Court related to permitting for Wisconsin frac sand mining.
Now we are just days away from the start of 2017, and we want to know if you're planning to make resolutions for the new year. Tell us why or why not, and if you do have a resolution or two or three, let us know. Call in now. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page or tweet us at Central Time WPR with your resolutions.
So surveys show that some of the most popular New Year's resolutions have to do with weight loss and health. Another popular one is about finances. A lot of people say they'd like to save more money and spend less.
Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page with your New Year's resolution and let us know if you have a plan to stick to that resolution.
That's the hard part.
Resolving is easy. Doing it, not always so. If you have succeeded or failed in your 2016 resolutions, let us know. Or again, if you don't make them at all, if you resolve to quit resolving at some point, let us know. 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
So I was looking back, Rob, and the Nielsen Group, the people who do the TV ratings, in January of this past year, so almost a year ago, did a survey to find out what the most popular resolutions were, and this is what they found. Mm-hmm. The most popular, 37% of people said they wanted to stay fit. Which
okay.
may, or I would think it would be get fit, but, you know, maybe they're already
more
fit.
More power to them, yeah.
Stay fit and healthy. Going along with that, 32% wanted to lose weight. So, yeah, that's a big percentage that are looking at health. I really like this one. 28% of people said that their resolution was to enjoy life to the fullest.
Okay, let me jump in on that one. I mean, and all of them really... I think you have to operationalize it a little bit. These are all big, enjoy life to the fullest. I think break it down a little bit.
Like,
that's asking for a lot.
Well, there are some that break it down a little more. 14% of people said travel more. Mm-hmm. That could fit under that. 12% said they want to read more. This one, too, I like. I guess you're kind of telling which kinds appeal to me. 14% said learn something new or take up a new hobby. And I'm guessing that they actually... had one.
Hopefully.
And just random. Just a random
We heard
one.
From Deborah in Brown Deer. Deborah says, I want to be on time to every appointment. And now let's get to our callers at 800-642-1234. Sally is with us in Middleton. Sally, hi.
Hi.
What is your New Year's resolution for 2017, Sally?
Well, keep up a regular exercise program. You know, get out of the chair. You know, I'm 84. I love to sit in the chair and read.
Well, me too.
But
you're not 84.
True.
What?
I said I love to sit and read too, and I'm not 84. Yeah. So how are you going to do it, Sally?
Well, just make myself get down on the side. You know, I've got a sidewalk in front of my house, and it I can have a choice of two or three directions. And I should just be out there walking vigorously for at least half an hour each day. But do I do it? Not quite.
Well, it's hard, Sally, though, on those icy winter days. Do you have a plan B? Can you pace around the house for a while?
Well, I could get out the vacuum cleaner.
Okay.
Clean house.
You'll have the cleanest house in town. Sally, thank you so much. Good luck meeting that resolution. I like it. How about you? We are taking your New Year's resolutions for 2017 at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. There's a line open for you.
So going back to the Nielsen survey, 18% of people said getting organized was theirs. And I have to say, that's kind of my perennial resolution that I just never quite seem to get my head around.
Yeah, I gave up on that a long time ago. Hey, we asked around with our staff, too. Willa from the financial department says she does make New Year's resolutions. Not everybody does, but it's a good time, she says, to reapply myself anew to something worthwhile. Her resolution is good. Reduce the spoilage rate in my refrigerator.
That's an awesome
food
goal.
Waste is a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
We actually do a show on how to reduce food waste by
planning out and buying what you need, not what you need for 2 weeks, and then things change and go bad.
Yeah, I do one of them CSAs where you get that. It's a vegetable subscription, and I've definitely reduced my straight-to-compost ratio. And you know what? If I'm not going to use it, if I know I'm not going to cook with that fennel, I bring it in and give it to you.
It's true. I am actually, we don't have a CSA because for a lot of reasons, but I am happy to take the cast-offs.
We'll go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Laura is up next in Heartland. Laura, hi.
Hi, my resolution is to take my health journey a little bit further. I lost 74 pounds in the last year. I'm 57 years old, and I did it holistically. No medications, no drugs, no health club. I just got up early in the morning, set my alarm clock, put my tennis shoes on, and went out and just pushed myself as hard as I could and added hills and running and got myself stronger that way and got my meds taken off and my blood pressures and everything back in order, and now I just want to get some strength in the arms and the core, so that's my goal for 2017.
Wow. So what's that? Is there a gym membership involved in that?
No, there's not.
I put on
my tennis shoes. I started this in November of 2015, so it's been a little over a year, and just walking in the neighborhood and, you know, bundle up, and I got one of those face masks for winter, and you know, just go out and, you know, I added some weights, arm weights, and, you know, now I just want to take it a little bit further and actually get down on the floor and maybe pull some more weights in.
Wow.
Because, again, it's been important when you get to this age.
Wow, Laura. Well, that's really inspiring.
Fantastic.
And, you know, I think a lot of what Laura is saying, they say is important for keeping resolutions is actually planning things out and, you know, kind of getting rid of all the excuses. She's got her gym shoes there ready to jump into. Mm-hmm. She's got a plan. She's got a schedule. She's got the warm clothes.
Yeah, I have a moderate. I push myself to the minimum just about every day, though. That's the thing for me. If I can make it a daily habit, I can't do it all at once. Laura, thank you so much for that call at 800-642-1234 as we take your New Year's resolutions. We heard from Scotty, the producer. You hear his name on the Kathleen Dunn Show and elsewhere. See his name online. He says, I love this resolution.
Yeah.
It's about time I learned to play the classic Wisconsin card game Sheep's Head. It's one of his resolutions for 2017. That's the fun one, he says.
I'm guessing there might be some less fun ones from
I grew up with Euchre and Pinochle. I've learned and played Sheep's Head, but not a lot. I would need a refresher.
I've never played. Maybe we need to get a WPR Sheep's Head Club going or something.
Yeah, I'm sure we've got a lot of players here.
So Stacy, who's a WPR Major Giving Officer, said she's making a resolution, and I really like this. She said, I've decided to consciously live a life of gratitude because it brings instant joy and hopefully overshadows the tragedies, sorrows, hardships, and pains of things happening around the world and right here at home. I think, you know, I don't make resolutions per se, but I do use this time of year to kind of refocus and remind myself. And reminding myself to be grateful is a really good one.
That's a good one. I failed at a couple of resolutions. I resolved to get back in the habit of donating blood again.
That's a good one.
You know, and I only get daily reminders from the Red Cross and still haven't done it. And I kind of met the one, listen to more new music. Stephen Thompson from NPR Music has helped me out with that one. So a little success.
Yeah.
There.
Let's go back to the phones, and we have Elizabeth in Oak Creek. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, guys. My resolution is kind of an odd one. I don't enjoy where I work. However, I'm going to push myself to go to work every day and do my very best. And not give up.
I think that's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And something that you can apply to other challenging situations, too.
Definitely. Yeah. You got to do it. So put the best foot forward. Yeah. Good luck with that, Elizabeth. And maybe you can find another job somewhere in 2017. I don't know if you're actively looking, but if so, definitely good luck with that. Any big, you said you don't do big resolutions, you reevaluate.
I kind of reevaluate. I said goals more than kind of resolutions.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it.
But, you know, I have a goal. I've got a couple little writing projects going on, and my goal is to finish those off. And that's something I enjoy, so it's kind of a reward too.
And Halima, our producer, says she's resolving, I didn't know this, she's resolving to dance every day. It makes her happy. It's exercise. She doesn't dance enough anymore.
All right. WPR Dance Party. Sheep's Head Tournament coming up.
I'll do the Sheep's Head. Oh, that was Michelle doing that. Sorry. But that was Michelle.
Michelle's going to
dance every day.
Well, maybe Halima will join.
All right. Dance us out, Michelle. Thanks for your calls. You can keep sharing your resolutions on the Central Time Facebook page. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. Stay tuned. The war on drugs has been around since the early 1970s. It was coined by the media after then-President Richard Nixon declared that drug abuse was public enemy number one.
But despite decades of policy efforts and billions of dollars spent on the issue, few would argue that it's been a complete success. And critics say there have been many unintended consequences that have hurt individuals, families, communities, and the nation as a whole.
Bill Bogart has studied several types of behavior that governments would like to eliminate or reduce. In his new book, Off the Street, Legalizing Drugs, he argues that it's time to try an approach of permit but discourage with currently illegal drugs. Bill Bogart is distinguished university professor and professor of law at the University of Windsor in Canada, and he joins us now. Bill, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me on.
So, Bill, you're based in Canada, but you've looked extensively at the war on drugs on both sides of the border. What have been the main components of the American and Canadian approaches?
Well, the main approach of the war on drug was an attempt to suppress a substance use. And we know from the statistics that that goal has not been successful, and indeed, in terms of some drugs, usage has actually increased during the period of the war on drugs. And beyond that, the war has really imposed significant collateral costs, such as the putting people in jail only for the only reason that they've used a substance. An illicit market that is run by the lawless who sell tainted substances that make people sick or even kill them, governments being deprived of a revenue stream from an industry, and it is an industry, and children being exploited in terrible ways. So I think in sum, you know, the goal has not been accomplished, and in addition, the war has really generated these very negative consequences.
You mentioned the term collateral damage, and in September, rapper Jay-Z created a video op-ed piece, actually, on why the war on drugs has been a failure and some of its impacts. Here's a clip of that.
In 1986, when I was coming of age, Ronald Reagan doubled down on the war on drugs that had been started by Richard Nixon in 1971. Drugs were bad, fried your brain. And drug dealers were monsters, the sole reason neighborhoods and major cities were failing. No one wanted to talk about Reaganomics and the ending of social safety nets, the defunding of schools and the loss of jobs in cities across America. Young men like me who hustled became the sole villain, and drug addicts lacked moral fortitude. In the 1990s, incarceration rates in the U.S. blew up. Today, we imprison more people than any other country in the world.
So, Bill Bogart, does what Jay-Z was saying there ring true to you?
Yeah, in large part, it does, I'm afraid. You know, the war on drugs has deflected us from all other, so many other kinds of social ills. But, and you know, the situation in the United States is complicated, and in part because of the election of Donald Trump, and we really don't know what his attitude to war on drugs will be. We've had signals that he thinks the solution is to legalize drugs. On the other hand, he's appointed Jeff Sessions, who says that good people don't smoke marijuana. So, you know, we'll just have to see what happens. But I can tell you in Canada, marijuana is on the eve of, recreational marijuana is on the eve of legalization. Our Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, who you and your listeners may have heard of, he's young and has kind of something of an international profile, campaigned on a promise to legalize and regulate recreational marijuana, and medicinal marijuana has been legal for about 15 years. But beyond that, we have a terrible opioid crisis, and I believe that in the United States, at least some of the states also have this crisis. And
we're certainly dealing with that here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, and I can tell you that, you know, the silver lining in that very, very dark cloud, and it is very dark indeed, is that Canada is by and large taking a public health approach to the opioid crisis. We're handing out naloxone, which is, as you know, an opioid inhibitor. We're passing Safe Samaritan laws so that people who are involved in drug usage, if somebody overdoses and they call 911, they will not be prosecuted. We are opening up safe injection sites. We've had a safe injection site in Vancouver for some years, but we're opening up others. And, you know, we're doing that so that there will be a harbor where people can come and they would be otherwise committing a criminal act, the usage of intravenous drugs. But we want them to have a harbor so that they will not get these terrible infections from dirty needles. They will not overdose, and they will not consume tainted substances because the drugs are tested before they use them. And I can also tell you that public opinion is shifting. There's just a poll out today of people in BC, and
British Columbia,
a majority of them now are willing to contemplate steps to legalize and regulate all drugs, not just marijuana.
So, Bill, you've looked at other behaviors that governments have an interest in discouraging, like gambling and smoking, and health habits that can lead to public health crises like obesity. What type of approach is most often taken in those cases?
Well, it really is the approach of permit but discourage, which has become kind of a mantra for me as I approach these things. I mean, what we do is we roll back the criminal law, and you know, you and your listeners will remember that there was a period of prohibition of alcohol in the United States and in Canada too, although we never constitutionalized it like you folks did. And gambling was a criminal activity in Canada until the late 60s. So in both those instances, we moved from a paradigm of criminalization to one of legalization and regulation, where we don't make criminals of people who, you know, drink alcohol or engage in gambling, but we do discourage harmful behavior through a range of regulatory mechanisms. And we've certainly done that with smoking. Smoking was never criminalized, but for the last four decades, we've, both in Canada and the United States, have invoked regulatory measures to discourage smoking of any kind, because there's no safe level of smoking. And, you know, that is a public health success story. Our smoking rates amongst adults on both sides of the borders four decades ago were approaching 50%. Now they're in the teens, and there's evidence that they're falling further. And even better news for kids, at least in Canada, but I think the statistics are roughly similar in the United States. We've got smoking amongst adolescents down to single digits. And that's a real success story, because if you don't start smoking before about the age of 20, you're very unlikely to develop a lifelong habit of smoking. So the next generation of Canadians, and hopefully Americans as well, will contain very few people who smoke.
So the permit but discourage approach has worked with smoking. It sounds like it's certainly moved us in the right direction. Have you seen other measures of effectiveness in things like you mentioned gambling and some of those health habits that surround obesity?
Well, I mean, you know, gambling, again, this is the stats for Canada, but I think the United States is about the same. We've got a problem gambling with impaired people with impaired control down to about 3% of those who gamble. So that translates into roughly 1.5% of the adult population. So the numbers are very low. Now, however, I'm not minimizing problems associated with problem gambling. You know, they can, somebody with impaired control can cause enormous consequences to themselves, their family, the community, their employers, etc. So I would never minimize issues associated with harmful behavior. But with problem gambling, we're down to about, as I said, 3% of those who gamble. And you know, I think the really new frontier, other than recreational drugs, is non-nutritious food. Mm-hmm. And you can see the movement arising to really engage this sort of permit but discouraged approach, where we're not outlawing pop or sugary cereals, but we are moving to regulatory interventions such as junk food taxes in an attempt to drive down the rates of harmful consumption. And while we're doing that, and this would also have applied to smoking, which is a very important point, we're really trying to shift norms. You know, smoking in the last four decades has moved from this sort of glamorous, sophisticated activity to one that is largely seen as a dirty and expensive habit. And with non-nutritious eating, we're really trying to move the goalposts in terms of public attitudes and behavior towards non-nutritious food. Now, it's an incredible battle, but you know that the approach is certainly permit but discourage.
We're talking right now with Bill Bogart about his most recent book titled Off the Street, Legalizing Drugs. He's a distinguished university professor and professor of law at the University of Windsor in Canada.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. How would you assess the success or failure of the war on drugs? And what do you think about the idea we'll be getting into, the idea that this permit but discourage approach should be applied to drugs? Legalized, permit their use, but discourage. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're continuing our conversation with Bill Bogart about his most recent book, Off the Street, Legalizing Drugs. He says that the war on drugs has failed and that it's time to try a policy of permit but discourage instead.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Would you support legalizing drugs across the board in an effort to better support addicts and lessen the cost to society of criminalization and prisons? Call in now, 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
So, Bill, let's get into the nuts and bolts of this. If we were to go with this new approach, get rid of the war on drugs, reduce the criminalization significantly, and permit drug use across the board, but discourage its use at the same time, how would that look? How would that be implemented?
Well, that's a very good question. The book uses words like cautiously and carefully repeatedly. So the proposition here is that, you know, we don't start selling heroin on street corners next month by any means. It would be an incremental approach. We would start off with marijuana because many jurisdictions are doing that. Legalize and regulate both medical marijuana, and as I said, we've done that in Canada for about 15 years, and recreational marijuana, and we'd learn from that about what legalization and regulation of a previously illegal substance looks like. And while we're doing that, I would say that our first priority must be the protection of children, because, you know, we don't want kids using drugs, and we don't have a particularly good track record of preventing kids at risk from using drugs in a criminal paradigm. But as we move to legalization and regulation, protecting kids would be the first priority. Then we could do a number of steps. So, for example, with the safe injection sites, at least in Canada, people still have to bring their own drugs, and that leaves them open to bringing tainted substances, etc. Now, those tainted substances are intercepted at the safe injection sites because they are tested. But the fact of the matter is, the whole situation would be far better off if we had, for example, medical-grade heroin available at the safe injection sites. But to do that, we'd have to travel farther down the legalization and regulation route.
And I want to make sure we can get to some of our callers here at 800-642-1234. And Mary in Milwaukee is up first. Hi, Mary.
Hello. Well, I agree with him. We definitely need to do something to change our system. It's not working. And I think our war on drugs has actually become a war on humanity.
Thanks for that call, Mary. And Bill?
Mary couldn't have said it better. I think, though, that the book tries to move through this whole problem very carefully, as I said, very carefully and very cautiously. And you know, I don't have to get to Mary because Mary's already convinced. The book is aimed more at people who at least would contemplate another approach other than continuing the war on drugs and doubling down, et cetera, et cetera. And to do that, I try to go through the evidence and studies very, very carefully.
Let's go back to the phones, and John in Madison joins us. Hi, John.
Hello. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
Hi, Bill.
Hi.
Go ahead, John.
Oh, I just wanted to say I agree with what you have to say there. A few things. One comment, I work with an emergency system, and I can tell you I've seen a number of people, and it's a constant battle all the time, and don't see it going away, and I'd rather see something there where it's regulated in a manner that it's safer for people in the street instead of things that go out that cause with the overdoses, and again, see it a lot. The other thing would be, and this would just be on the regulatory mechanism, I would suggest that the taxes they raise just so they can see track better for sin taxes, if you will, like for alcohol, tobacco, or just for other drugs that are legalized, that they don't go into a general fund, but they go specifically to a program such as for addiction treatment.
Thanks for that, John. I want to make sure Bill can respond. So John actually used the phrase get it off the street, and that's actually the name of your book, Bill, Off the Street,
yeah.
Legalizing Drugs. So what does that particular phrase, off the street, mean to you? I mean, you talked about those safe places for people to use drugs, but are there other elements to that?
Well, I think it's off the street in two senses. Off the street in the sense of get people who have become dependent on drugs. And, you know, not all people who use drugs become dependent, but for those who do, it can be a pretty miserable existence. And let's not condemn them to the streets, but let's get them help. And then the second meaning of off the streets is let's take this whole enterprise away from the lawless. We're allowing an industry to be run by the underground, and we have to confront these people, and the way to confront them is to take the market away from them. But the other point that that was made here that I would like to comment on was, let's not let the tax revenues fall into the general coffers, but use them for prevention, protection of kids, treatment, and I entirely agree with that. I advocate that in the book, for two reasons, not only for prevention, treatment, protection of kids, but if you look at people's views of these things, people will support taxes on commodities if they are told that those taxes will go to prevention or treatment or prevention of misuse. So, for example, soda taxes, we know that's the case. Like if people are told, look, the additional taxes on soda will go to fight obesity, to promote more nutritious eating, people are much more likely to support those taxes.
And kind of piggybacking on that, we had a comment from Troy from Northwestern Wisconsin, who's a recovering addict, and he says getting into a methadone treatment clinic was really important for him. He's really grateful he could do it. It's costly, and sometimes parents or the addicts themselves aren't able to do it. So it sounds like that's another reason to argue for the money being plowed back into treatment instead of a general fund.
Yes, that's true. Now, of course, we're different in Canada than you folks in the United States because, as you know, we have universal health care,
right.
Which is not a perfect system. I don't want to suggest that it is, but that sort of treatment, if it's approved, would be paid for by the government. But the general point that's being made is certainly an excellent one. I mean, if we believe that we want to permit but discourage, I mean, one of the ways to discourage harmful use is to get people help and support them so they can move away from these harmful drugs.
And Bill, in just the 30 seconds or so we have left, I'm sure there are some people that would say, well, marijuana is one thing, but, you know, if we legalize all types of drugs, even with this permit but discourage approach, you know, once the horse is out of the barn and if it doesn't work or if there are bad consequences, there's no going back. Quickly, what would you say to encourage them to give this approach a try?
Well, we're back to the words cautious, careful, and incremental. I don't support the notion that we'd start selling heroin on street corners tomorrow. We would do this incrementally. For example, more safe injection sites that provide medical grade heroin. Looking at the Portugal experiment, where drugs have been decriminalized but not legalized and regulated. So there are all sorts of step-by-step approaches that we can take and assess those consequences as we go along.
Well, Bill, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for the opportunity of being on your program.
Bill Bogart is Distinguished University Professor and Professor of Law at the University of Windsor in Canada. He joined us to talk about his most recent book, Off the Street, Legalized Drugs. You can keep the conversation going on the Central Time Facebook page. We'd love to hear what you think.
We just caught up with a little bit of the news of the weird here in Wisconsin. About a week ago, Fox 6 News in Milwaukee reported on a mysterious and, as yet, unexplained falling object.
A man's van was dented by a black cone-shaped metal object that seemed to have fallen, not been thrown, at the truck. The man said police reported the object had a diesel fuel smell.
As of last week, the object was still a mystery, but one theory out there points toward an old Russian satellite that was expected to re-enter the Earth's atmosphere. Its path could have taken it, apparently, over the Midwest.
We haven't been able to find a conclusive follow-up to the story yet, though.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of the, you know, UFO-type websites took this and ran with it big time.
Really? That's hard to believe.
It does. I saw pictures of the object. Somebody described it as looking like a grill. It looks like it could have come from human hands. I'll just say that.
Okay, but the dropping, not throwing, that makes it interesting.
Right, so I think the truth is out there. You and I need to get over and investigate.
I think we need to get the Scooby van and head out there.
Definitely.
It's not that far. It's Milwaukee, right?
Right, not far at all. Well, solving mysteries for you every day. This is Central Time.